Good afternoon. We're going to open up the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is April 13th, 2005. Robin Lamont, our scheduler and LFO officer, and Kat Bell, our subcommittee assistant, are with us today. And today we have a special hearing in that it's Small Business Day here at the Capitol, and we're going to focus our conversations on small business and the role they play in the state of Oregon. Starting off, we're going to ask that Daryl from the Oregon Automobile Dealers Association would come up. J.O. Wilson is going to pop in at any time, I understand, as well, from NFIB. So, welcome, and we appreciate you coming forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Daryl Fuller. I'm a lobbyist for the Oregon Auto Dealers Association. OADA represents franchise new car dealers. I'm here primarily in my capacity as the president of the Oregon Small Business Coalition. OSBC is a coalition of primarily retail trade business associations in the state of Oregon. We represent 20 different organizations, and by and large, those 20 organizations represent pretty much every retail business establishment that you have in your communities. And I just want to comment first that, Mr. Chair, we appreciate the hearing, chance to talk about small business and the impact that it has in the state of Oregon. It's become almost cliche that small businesses are the backbone in the state of Oregon, and sometimes it's easy to lose sight of that. So I want to just make mention of a couple of things that weighs heavily, I think, on some of our members when we discuss small businesses and especially economic development. It sounds real good, it looks real good, and everybody's in favor of economic development. Everybody applauds when we can say we attracted a new business in a new community. They're going to build a facility. They're going to employ 300 people with full-time wages. And that we beat out Denver or we beat out someplace in Nebraska, that we were one of the two finalists. And we were able to give them an incentive package that attracted them to Oregon instead of someplace else. And the marquee value of attracting those kind of businesses to Oregon is important. And I don't want to take anything away from that. On the other hand, if we provide an incentive to existing small businesses that allows 500 small businesses in Oregon each to hire one additional employee, which is 500 people instead of 300 people employed, we don't see that in the newspaper unless somebody is decrying corporate welfare. There is an advantage to taking advantage of the businesses that are already here. There are third and fourth generation businesses in the state of Oregon, especially with the economy the way it has been, that are having a hard time staying afloat. I would hope that as this legislature focuses on how to spend the resources it has available to it, that it would not forget the businesses that are already here, but look for opportunities to provide economic development by making sure those businesses don't either go away or have to move elsewhere. Members of my association, as they have moved ownership from one to another, moved to Vancouver prior to the sale because they can sell their business as a resident of Washington and save a lot of money. The business, because we're auto dealers, stay in Oregon. So the employees will stay here, the business stays here, but the ownership often will go outside of the state prior to the sale. And small businesses in Oregon aren't important just because they're small businesses. I believe small businesses are important in Oregon because they want to be bigger businesses. Nike was a small business at one time. Ron Tonkin started his first used car store by converting an old gas station and selling used cars. Ron Tonkin is now one of the largest dealers in the state of Oregon. The largest dealer in the state of Oregon started out in Medford, Oregon, and his corporate headquarters are still there. It's the Lithia Auto Group, with something like, and Senator Verger may know the numbers better than I do, with hundreds of dealerships in five or six different states. But the corporate headquarters is still in Medford, Oregon. And Sid DeBoer is a small business owner, or at least he started that way. And I think the state of Oregon would do well to focus as much, or at least some, considerable amount of its economic development resources on helping the people that are already here to ensure that they can stay, that they can thrive, and that they can grow. And to the degree that you can leave at the end of this session and go home to your Rotary Club or to your church group or wherever you happen to be and say, this is what I did for our local community, I think that would be a successful session for economic development in Oregon. And with that, I appreciate your time, and I would be happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Any questions of the committee? Thank you very much. We truly appreciate that thoughtful kickoff to our agenda today. I'm going to ask next if Mr. Bill Carter would come up and address us.
Good afternoon, Chairman Smith, members of the committee. It's nice to see you again this afternoon. Other guests. For the record, I am Bill Carter. I'm the State Director for the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network. Thank you for inviting me here to provide information about the Small Business Development Centers. With me today are Oregon Coast Community College President Patrick O'Connor, sitting right back here. President O'Connor hosts one of the SBDCs in Lincoln City and Newport. Also, Christine Krieger, the Associate State Director for the State of Oregon, is here with me. And a number of our directors are here from around Oregon since they came in for Small Business Day at the Capitol. And then we also have some of our small business clients that we've worked with in the last year or so with us today to tell you a little bit about how they have been assisted by their local SBDC office. The Small Business Development Center Network is headquartered in Eugene, and there are 19 centers statewide. It's truly a statewide resource. And in a sense, you're part of our board of directors. You make an investment in this. It is a business assistance network. It's a partnership between the Small Business Administration and the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. It's a long-standing partnership covering a number of years, almost a couple of decades. The Business Assistance Centers are commonly known as SBDCs. I'll try not to use the acronym, but it's pretty difficult. And in Oregon, we've adopted the brand Biz Center, and that's kind of our swoosh. And it's a powerful ingredient of an organization to be known by your brand. The logo that we use is on the cover of my comments in front of you. We also have a 20th center. It is an import-export center known as our Small Business International Trade Office, and it provides assistance to businesses statewide. Today is April 13th, and it's Small Business Day in Oregon. Represented in the Galleria are many small business organizations that provide assistance and several small businesses, and I hope you get a chance to go out and visit with them. I know that they would appreciate getting a chance to talk to you. I think everyone in this room realizes the importance of small business to the Oregon economy. Daryl just made some profound remarks about small business. Oregon is a small business state. There are 330,000 small businesses in Oregon. 98% of Oregon firms are small. 90% of these have less than 20 employees. I just returned from the tourism conference in Pendleton, and the keynote speaker was remarking that tourism is definitely a small business traded sector industry. He managed traded sectors being the type of industries that bring outside money into the state. But he said that the overwhelming majority of tourism businesses had less than 15 people. 2 days from now, the small business owners and the entrepreneurs in this room and throughout the state will be filing their federal and state income taxes. I presume they're thinking about the same things I did prior to the sale of my company 4 years ago. For example, in addition to their income tax payments that are due on Friday, and I know most of you are small business owners, so you might be thinking about that in addition to the things that you're thinking about in this building.
Oh, jeez.
I'm sorry to be the one that brought it up for you.
Yeah, I got to pay last year.
Also, their quarterly tax payments for unemployment are due. Their loans need to be paid. Their rent needs to be paid. Utilities and their health insurance need to be paid. Operating costs and so on need to be paid. this is a typical get up in the morning, you know, conversation that a small business owner has with himself is, what am I going to do today, you know, to stay in business, take care of my customers, take care of my employees. When I owned my company, the most important thing to me was to ensure that each of my employees was paid on time, every time, without fail. And over 51% of the paychecks that are deposited on the 1st and the 15th of every month come from a small business owner. The taxes of these employees of small businesses are also due on Friday. So when you see the ching-ching coming into the general fund starting next Friday, that's coming substantially from the small businesses in the state. Small businesses are truly the engines of our economy. Hector Barreto, administrator of the Small Business Administration in Washington before Congress, just 2 weeks ago, summed up his view of the importance of small business, stating, "Following times of economic downturn, small businesses play a leading role in economic recovery. It is small businesses that generate approximately two-thirds of all new private sector jobs." And private sector jobs are the jobs that pay the taxes, that pay for our teachers and our public safety, and so on. So if jobs are the yardstick, the metric that you're measuring impact with, of the investments that you make in economic development, I don't think that you can do better than invest in programs and policies that assist small businesses. Now, I'd like to take a few minutes to update you on your investment in the small business development centers here in Oregon. In addition to our higher ed hosts, like the Oregon Coast Community College, the U.S. Small Business Administration and the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department are our partners. Our state funds, our lottery funds that are administered through the Economic Development Department, and they're meant to be used for small business advising, training, and technical assistance. The lottery grant is a required match, legal match for the federal money. And I've included a chart in my statement that should give you an idea of the breakout of our funds. Presently, if you were to look at the blue portion of that chart, that's the SBA grant that comes to Oregon. But that grant has to be divided up 20 times to go to each of the service centers throughout Oregon. And those sub-grants amount to $30,250 per service center. Now, 10 years ago, that bought a little bit more time of a service center director. But today, it equates to 0.37 FTE. The center directors are getting squeezed. The lottery grant, the OECD lottery grant, also is divided up into 20 sub-grants. And they average about $46,000 each. And that equates to a 0.64 business advisor. Now, the balance of the revenue that these local SBDCs use comes from their host institutions, and it varies. Some hosts are in a position to invest a little bit more in their SBDC than others. Yeah, but community college funding is another issue that's before you. Well, I think it's apparent that a 0.37 director and a 0.64 counselor, we've set pretty high expectations for these 19 SBDCs around the state. And it makes the outcomes of the SBDCs that much more significant. Every year there's at least one, if not three or four or five different surveys and studies that are done of our clients. We're almost overstudied. The study that the Economic Development Department has conducted each of the last 3 years is called the Campbell DeLong Study. It is available on the OECD website under the Governor's Small Business Council link, or you can contact my office. I'd be glad to get you that study or a summary of that study. That study suggests that that the SBDCs in Oregon have created over 5,000 jobs since the legislature met last. The The SBDCs are also great at partnering.
We have a question here. Representative
yes.
Richardson.
Yes.
Sir, would you mind clarifying for me how you determine that number?
The survey is contracted out to an independent firm, Representative Richardson, and they design a study that asks our clients directly a series of questions, including impact and the number of jobs that they could attribute directly to the assistance. So we are consistently asking, you know, a large sample, about 10% of the clients that we serve, to give us their information. And if you only did the study 1 year, it might be reason to question it. But when you get similar results multiple years in a row, and there's another series of studies called the Crisman studies, and I'd be glad to provide that information also, that are conducted nationally. And you look at their data, and it's quite comparable. And that information, of course, goes back almost two decades.
Okay. So, please follow up.
You know, I've talked earlier today. Is
yes.
that the survey part of the information that you'll be providing me through electronic form?
Chair Smith, Representative Richardson, yes, I can provide it electronically. I can forward it directly to you or to the committee.
Yeah, I think the whole committee would like to see that. Is that the Campbell v. Long?
The Campbell Long study was the study, Chair Smith, that the representative and I talked about.
That'd be good
shortly
if
ago.
We could get that, and then we'll disseminate it to the
All right.
whole committee.
Good.
Good job.
Across Oregon, a new small business expansion, the addition of just three or four new jobs, and certainly the invention of a new patented product. Might be big news in a local weekly paper, but it's not going to make headline news in some of our daily newspapers, and therefore it doesn't have the attractiveness to the attention that maybe small business should have. But if you follow the line of reasoning that Daryl presented just a minute ago, that is happening several hundred times. On any given day of the week, the SBDCs in Oregon work with 300 or 400 small businesses. And on an annual basis, we work with about 10,000 businesses. And if you divide that into 330,000, you can see that we're working with a very, very small percentage of Oregon's businesses. And that 330,000 doesn't include the people that want to go into business that might have a great new idea. It's my belief, and I think it's supported by study after study, that the innovators and the entrepreneurs, the heart of our economy, are already here in Oregon. They're on Main Street. They're the small business owners and employees that already work here. And I ask for your assistance in ensuring that Oregon small business owners and entrepreneurs have a sensible regulatory policy. They have health insurance opportunities for their employees, that they have access to the type of capital that they need to make their businesses grow, that they have access to training, advising, and technical assistance, such as the SBDCs provide, to help them prosper. And generally, we would ask that you help create a very positive and increasingly supportive business climate. I've included a packet of information that gives you an overview of the types of demographics that the people that we serve, types of businesses served, impact data, and other information that you find useful. Thank you very much, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill, if you were to name the top five things that we could do to improve the business climate in Oregon, what would they be? And I should have given you advance notice of that question, because that's not fair, but The things that come to your mind, not necessarily five, but what can we be doing as a legislative body?
Well, as a business owner, Chair Smith and Senator Morris, I fought two particular issues constantly. One was just regulations that came out of nowhere. And I didn't distinguish as a business owner what level of government they came from. And I'm the proud owner of an ADA-compliant bathroom on an office building that I built right at the top of the stairs with no elevator, because I had to have a handicap accessible bathroom on that floor. It cost several thousand dollars. So, I mean, if you think about that occurring hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times across Oregon, you know, sidewalk issues or whatever. Another area that I never seemed to be able to get right, and I put a lot of effort and money into it, was getting the employment taxes, employment tax forms done on time, regularly, and keeping up with that. And I know that's a big hurdle for a lot of businesses. You don't typically budget 250% of salary when you hire a new employee, but it probably takes somewhere in that range, that amount of money, to cover the costs of an employee every time you add somebody. So, you know, regulatory streamlining, paying attention, the bully pulpit, certainly when you go home on Main Street, is important to keep our local city and county officials honest about, you know, the regulatory climate. Coordinating what we do with the federal government in terms of employment law, I think would be important. The business assistance programs that the SBDCs provide are extremely high-impact, below-the-radar programs. I think just having a business plan written for every business in Oregon would have a greater impact than just about anything else in terms of outcomes. It's just such a powerful thing, and it's the number one reason why businesses fail, is that they have no business plan. So, I got down to kind of three.
Follow-up question?
Please.
What thoughts do you have with respect to our land use system and municipal government's requirements for building codes? Do you have any reflections on those issues?
I'm not sure I'm following your question.
Well, I could lead you.
In this building?
Yeah. Well, that would be doubtful. You know, we just have, on the front page of my local paper, we had a business from California that was needing a site. And, of course, they had to jump through all kinds of parking variances, and they're in a very tight timeline. Mm-hmm. And they may go somewhere else because we couldn't accommodate with our rules their needs. We've had situations in Linn County where we've had the city of Lebanon has a desire to grow and to make things happen, and have had people that have just chosen to stop those activities. And I sense that land use reform, if we could leave this session with some significant land use reform that still preserves our qualities that we want in Oregon, but yet allows businesses to develop and grow in a way that is also reasonable, I think that is an important thing.
Chair Smith, Senator Morse, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Let's go Senator Johnson, then Representative Richardson.
I'm just curious about the... Thank you for your presentation. I apologize for being late, first of all. I'm just curious about the mechanisms of the advice that you're giving to folks. You are going to have some people come into the small business development centers with a well-thought-out plan and a program that has some chance of success. And I think just my experience in belonging to chambers and being part of the business community and the place where I live leads me to believe that there will be others who will come in with less of a percentage of making it. Talk a little bit about how those centers counsel folks with respect to some dogs just don't hunt. And how does that work out? I mean, is your job to resurrect every plan and to try to salvage it when it comes in, or are there some instances where the best, kindest, most economical advice you can give is maybe you ought to think about doing something different?
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, it's a great question, and I typically limit my counseling to SBDC service center directors, and I don't directly deal with business people, so I'm sure there's some folks here that could probably use their personal experience in terms of how to handle it.
Then let me nuance the question a little bit more. You're giving guidance to your center directors, and that circles back around to how personality dependent the success of the centers are. In my observation, you're going to have some people that are racehorses and others that maybe aren't, and I'm just trying to get a sense of how realistic is the advice that's being delivered on the ground. What do you advise your guys now that you've opened the door for the more nuanced question? How do you advise your guys when a plan comes in that has marginal chance to succeed?
My advice and their advice is pretty consistent, and sometimes it's blunt, but hopefully not harsh. And that is that maybe your retirement money is best left in your retirement account. You're right. Some business plans don't have a chance, and after you've looked at several hundred business plans, like the counselors around the state have, they're almost intuitive about what works, but we want to give people a chance. We want to listen to them, hear them out. We accept all comers. All you have to do is call up and make an appointment. The counseling portion of the service is free, and we will listen to it. But sometimes we send people back home with a task. We need a cash flow analysis, or we need you to do this task. That tends to screen some of those people out. And there's other mechanisms, but sometimes it's just the honest truth. We've actually had some businesses that were sent away and said it won't work, and they went out and they did it anyway. So sometimes we're not always right about the call. Relative to the centers having a character that is reflective of the local leadership, I think that's true. And each of the centers resides in a community that has unique characteristics, and they are hosted by institutions, community colleges and universities that have unique characteristics as well. So the network has a grassroots local flavor. That's a good thing. When we're in Salem, you run a program from the 50,000-foot level, it'd sure be nice if I get everybody to do the same thing at the same time and just design one program and just have it implemented. But I don't think that's realistic. And so I'm left with the task to manage 19 centers plus the International Trade Center that do look different than each other. And I've come to the conclusion that that's a good thing. I think there is work to do in terms of leveraging best practices off of one center to another. And the directors are on that. That's part of our plan for the next several months or year or so, is to find better ways to collaborate amongst ourselves as well as with other entities in the community.
Thank you.
Representative Richardson. Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Mr. Carter, I'm going through the materials that you provided. I'm looking at the graphs, and I just would like to get clarification, because what I'm seeing is that the difference between 2003 and 2004 as far as job created by small business clients has gone down by 72%. The new wages and increase in sales has gone up by over 10%. The new business customers counseled has gone down, and I didn't do the number on that, but fairly substantially, and the numbers of trainees, the attendees to training, has also gone down fairly substantially. And so I'm seeing, except for the wages having gone up or the total revenue, all the other indicators have gone down compared 04 with 03. What would have caused that trend?
Chair Smith, Representative Richardson, I'm aware of those things, and I'm not sure. I can tell you that this particular study for last year, for that time period, was a telephone survey that was conducted the last 2 weeks of October. And that's the same time period that all of us were getting bombarded four or five times a night with telephone inquiries about the election. Mm-hmm. And so there's those and other questions about last year's study about whether or not it was really reflective. I would say this, is that if you took all of the studies from all of the different people that have conducted studies nationally and you plotted similar data and ran a regression analysis on it, you would probably get a truer reflection of jobs created, wages generated. And so although I'm not going to defend any given data point in any one of these studies, I think that generally, year after year, they tend to support that that the business advising it makes a substantial difference in the conduct of the business. To support that, I have some data. I'd be glad to provide this from you. This was sent by our national association, so it's national data, all 66 SBDC networks nationwide. And they suggest, and I thought I was just really astounded at this, small businesses that received in-depth SBDC assistance experienced 25 times the job growth of average businesses. That's out of the national data. That's pretty incredible, isn't it? So, but, and then they referenced the study that they got that information from. So, studies come and go.
But national studies certainly give national data.
Yeah.
Our focus, of course, is on Oregon.
Right.
And I'm looking at the bottom of this, the source for information on this, and it says Oregon Small Business Development Center Network. Are they the ones that conducted the survey in October just before the election?
Chair Smith, the Representative Richards, that would be us. The study that that we are sourcing is the study that was conducted by the Economic Development Department, contracted out to Campbell DeLong, which is a Portland research firm. And that's the study that I'll provide you
with. The one we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know if you got your money's worth. Or if OECD did, doing a telephone study a week before an election. But maybe the rates were low.
Any other questions? Thank you. I'm going to use the prerogative of the chair and ask Mr. Gary Neal if he would come up and testify before the committee. Committee members, Gary Neal is the general manager at the Port of Morrow. The second largest port in the state of Oregon, and I would share with you, Gary, hands down, probably has more experience than all of us combined in working with business and industry and trying to create jobs. And so I asked if he would just come and talk with us for a few minutes and just talk about his experience in what it takes to create jobs in the state of Oregon, and the role ports play in the creation of jobs in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I don't know about Representative Smith's comments about me, but I have had a little bit of experience in working in economic development and trying to create some jobs. thank you for the comments. My name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Morrow, and I guess, you know, pretty much my job is trying to either create jobs or maintain jobs or stimulate some opportunities for commerce and business in the area that I represent and serve. I've been at the Port of Morrow since 1989 and have had a lot of opportunities to be a part of attracting businesses, but also lost a lot of opportunities of business opportunities that we weren't successful in getting as well. But I guess in relation to jobs and our efforts in trying to attract them, I think there's some basic things that that we think about, and a lot of those are involve working with businesses that are already there, working with someone that's familiar with the business structure and regulations of the state makes it a lot easier than trying to attract someone from outside the state, even though we're all always working hard to try to attract someone to locate here as well. But I think that the tools that we try to bring to the table to make it easy to do business is a very important piece of trying to either work with an existing business or attract a new business. Whether that's working with our small business development centers, working with our loan programs and businesses that are or the entities that operate and manage those programs, whether it's the economic development agencies, we kind of try to work together as a team basis to try to bring these tools to the table with a client. The comments earlier I heard about business plans is right on. Those organizations that that work with those businesses to try to, if they don't have a business plan, at least to help walk through that exercise to make sure that they at least understand what they think they're trying to get into. As far as Senator Johnson's comments about, you know, what about the ones that just don't hunt? You know, those are difficult things to tell somebody who has a dream or a vision, you know, to you know how you deal with those. You know, statistic wise, you know, we don't do a lot of retail activities so at the port because on the retail side, you know, I think the standard comments about, well, 95% of restaurants aren't successful. You know, somebody trying to start a restaurant needs to know this, you know, needs to know the fact that there's a lot of people that don't make it. And I guess if they choose to make that investment, I guess that's, you know, you just try to have them do that with their eyes wide open. The regulatory process in this state needs to continue to be streamlined. I know that there's some efforts out there that are ongoing. I think there's some Office of Regulatory Streamlining or something like that out there, and I think they need to continue to work on that because it's still... even though we've had a lot of downs over the last couple of years and effort to try to push on regulatory streamlining, I think there's still a long ways to go in that regard. You know, and I don't know, I don't quite understand it. You know, when we talk about ports and the business that we do and even our local jurisdictions, when we're working on trying to push out and promote, you know, telecommunications efforts, all of a sudden, there's new efforts out there to, well, we got to go get a permit for every pole we put up. You know, it's just something like just one more layer of the process that we didn't have to do before that's out there today. And so we see that, and we think, you know, well, let's try to make this thing work rather than layering on more process. And there's still a lot of that going on. The comments about, I think it's just important for easy access to the programs. If we have a business that is thinking about expanding or wanting to come into the port, whether it's creating 2 or 3 or 5 jobs or 50 jobs, it's important to have quick turnaround. And I think, you know, some of the programs that are maybe based at the state level wouldn't hurt to have out into the field a little bit more, a little bit easier access, more rapid response, more familiar with the areas that maybe, you know, there are different parts of the state, and if you're not familiar with, if you're not part of those different areas, it's pretty hard sitting in Salem to understand what the challenges you have in front of you based on where you're trying to make things happen. One of the other programs that we had the opportunity to develop and oversee is the small business loan programs. Through the and leverage dollars to generate some federal dollars to lend out for small businesses as well, and I think that's another area. It'd be nice to see the state prioritize some of those match opportunities to leverage those federal dollars and some of those business assistance programs as well. I guess I could go on and on, but I guess those are just the thoughts that come to mind off the top of my head. And we're always out there trying to recruit all the time and make things better, whether it's working with existing businesses or new businesses. But 85% of your growth typically comes from within, and you got to keep that in mind. Thank you very much.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I know among ports, yours is very highly thought of, and I guess that's what prompts this question, whether or not there is a more formalized mechanism to have the Oregon Public Ports Group report back to the legislature. I'm intrigued by the question that Senator Morris asked with respect to, we hear lots of complaints about the regulatory streamlining, and in fact this panel is dealing with the budget of the Office of, or it's a subset of a budget, the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. I'm not sure I even know what those mean anymore, and whether or not the Ports Group would put some energy into actually developing some kind of little white paper that gave some examples. One that surprised me that I learned in my own district was that one of the agencies was enforcing rules for the installation of septic tanks. It appeared differently between two counties. But if there was a way that, through a more formalized mechanism, you could bring to the attention of the legislature those places that, from the perspective of the ports, that are unique statutory creatures, but at least from your perspective, ways we could help that weren't thought out through the geographic diversity of the whole ports group.
Yeah. Senator Johnson, I think that's a I would like to see, you know, our ports group be able to play a little bit more official role in that responsibility in trying to report to the legislature in a variety of areas. Regulatory component is obviously one of those important ones. I know that our neighbors to the north in the state of Washington have a little bit more formalized process that they're able to do that and actually establish a little bit more formal process in identifying areas of trying to make it better for port authorities to do business and actually make recommendations to the legislature in their behalf, more like a legislative staff process, and I think it would be appropriate for us to figure out how to accommodate that. I know that there's been discussions about us, the opportunity for ports to be a little bit more involved in some of the loan programs, and maybe through that mechanism there might be an opportunity for us to have some additional resources to be able to put the manpower necessary to give you good information on that.
Beyond small business development centers, you had mentioned tools that were out in the field. Tools or partners, could you give some flavor of who all the Port of Morrow considers your partners, the Governor's Economic Revitalization Team, or what other technical assistance is available? And then also, I'd be interested in knowing your thoughts on what would be, for lack of a better word, sort of minimum qualifications to be offering economic development advice in the field, be it a port, be it a small business development center, be it some local group of folks who'd come together. What would be the minimum qualifications that they should have to be part of the state's efforts to create economic development?
Well, let me try this, okay? I guess in regards to the tools that we use at first, we identify a potential project or opportunity, and we typically will contact the employment office to talk about some job programs. We'll talk to Blue Mountain Community College, Art Hill in particular, who's in the back of the room, about some assistance on some specialized training for the business for the worker workforce requirements.
Forgive me, is Mr. Hill the president?
No, Mr. Hill is in charge of the Small Business Center and the economic development part and the training.
Thanks. That's all I needed to know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sure he has an official title, but I...
Vice President of Customer Management.
That's what it is. And then we also utilize a team effort. It depends on what the client's potential needs are. If there's some special areas of environmental quality issues, that has to deal with DEQ, I'll actually contact the regional manager at DEQ and have some conversations with them about trying to streamline some of those efforts. And I also look at funding mechanisms. I'll contact my people in our area that's tied in with business loan and business assistance programs, one of them which is on your committee here, chairman of the committee, and actually runs a loan program in our area, and does an excellent job, by the way. And GEODC, which is our EDA, economic development arm, will also contact potentially the Baker Morrow Partnership, or at least identify what the potential is. That's our regional partnership, as a source of additional funding opportunities. We'll try to utilize our state regional development officer to see what tools they can also help bring to the table. And that's probably the extent of it, unless there's some other areas of specialized that we may need. We'll also contact the county, because they're the ones who are the enterprise zone administrators, or the city, if it's in the city, for potential negotiations in that regards. So we try to look at what the needs are and identify that. So those are the local tools. The things that would make it better is some of our entities that are involved in loan programs could do more and have the capabilities of bringing more loan programs from the field, and it would be nice to see that. As far as minimum qualifications, I think some experience in business recruitment, to be honest with you, it'd be nice to see someone that had experience in business to sit across the table from a client. My background, and maybe the part of the reason that I'm a little unique in what I do, is I grew up in the construction and development business on the private enterprise side. And there's a million reasons why something doesn't happen. And I can tell you that typically it's every public entity that I go to that's a regulator, they'll tell me why it doesn't work. And that's not acceptable to me. I always figure out why we can do it as opposed to why it doesn't work. And there's got to be somebody there that pushes it past the no's, because definitely there's a million no's out there. And that's how come we are able to possibly get a project or an opportunity evolved, is because we don't take no for an answer, unless we agree with it. But typically we don't. I mean, we're looking for the yes, and we're trying to make it easier for our business. And so we take on a little bit more responsibility than maybe somebody else might in this same kind of role, because we're trying to make the answers yes for our client and make it work for them.
Perfect.
So I think in minimum is it'd be nice to see somebody on the field that was helping, have some business background, or had sit on the private enterprise side of the table to have that experience.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We really appreciate that. I think what we're going to end up having to do, maybe, is have a ports day. Bring the ports here and have a further discussion on this.
Well, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I'm going to next call up two people. One is J.L. Wilson from NFIB, and I'm going to ask if Anita Smith would come on up as well, and we'll go from there. J.L. is the – well, I'll let J.L. introduce himself, but I do want to introduce Anita Smith. She is the owner of Hannah B's. I'll let her introduce herself.
Excuse my chair here.
Yeah,
it's
good food.
Afternoon, so I'm squeezing you guys in.
Well, welcome. I'm going to have JL start really quick, simply because I know JL was rushing to get here and is rushing to speak to.
I'm fine. Thank you, Chair Smith and members of the committee. JL Wilson and I have the great privilege, and I have for 5 years, of representing small business owners. I have 12,000 in my organization. I have 12,000 dues-paying members of NFIB here in Oregon. And I've always puzzled, and it's my honor to represent them, and I've always puzzled why they're not considered, quote-unquote working-class folks, because you know, all a small business owner really entitles you to do is have an entity which you have to open up in the morning and probably man the till and be the HR manager and the regulatory compliance officer and the bookkeeper, mm-hmm. and, you know, probably clean up the bathrooms at night before you shut up for the evening, and all of that, and you get the privilege of perhaps missing out on a paycheck or two if you come up short at the end of the month. So I've always been proud to represent those types of folks. And in terms of our demographics, we mirror exactly the state as a whole. You know, there's about 108,000 companies that pay into the state's unemployment trust fund, which means they have actual employees. And 60% of those have five or fewer employees. And so when I tell my stories about these types of small business owners, this happens. 60% of Oregon companies, this is exactly what an owner does in their business. 60% have fewer than five employees, and 77% have fewer than 10. We've consistently been in the top 10 of states with regard to business startups, with regard to small businesses per capita. And when you talk about net new jobs created during a recession that we've just climbing our way out of, you know, all the job growth is done in the small business side. You got roughly half, a small business in Oregon is defined as a company with 50 or fewer employees. Those companies today generate about 50 to 51% of all Oregon jobs. So it's roughly split 50-50 between what's considered a small business and what's considered a big business. And so given all that, you understand why our thrust is always issues of cash flow. If I could boil it down to a single issue, it's issues of cash flow. That's why we care about regulation and compliance with regulation, why we care about taxes, why we care about how much insurance costs. You know, even today in the Trade and Economic Development Bill, we supported a bill that allowed an emerging business to defer income taxes for 4 years, and it's strictly an issue of cash flow for a small and emerging company. And with our own businesses, we find in our yearly surveys that about, I'd say 12-13% on average access or procure services from a government entity like an SBDC. We basically use the SBDC program. And the reason that we value that, and I can say that that's the one entity that we support to the fullest, is because they turn people with good ideas into people capable of running a business based on their good idea. And so that's why we support Bill Carter, support his organization. Hope you do too.
Thank you very much. Any questions for JL? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. JL, I'll ask you the same question I asked Bill. What would be your top five things that we could do that would help small business and the business climate in Oregon? And I know that's not a fair question. I told Bill it wasn't either because I didn't prepare him for it. But generally, give us some insights as to what we could actually do that would be most important to a small business.
Boy, you're asking here. Rarely do I get a chance to spout off the NFIB agenda here. I'm not going to do that. Thank you, Chair Smith and Senator Morse. I feel very strongly that Oregon is a relatively decent place to do business in terms of taxes unless you've got something to sell or to pass on, which is why you understand, at least understand why we would support things like capital gains and estate taxes. The ability to sell something and invest and to pass on a business is very critical to us. I think that healthcare costs, those have overtaken every other issue as the number one issue for small companies, and there has got to be a way to have an attractive low-cost benefit plan in the small group market, which is the 2 to 50 employee range. I would protect our workers' comp system, and I lump in with that our unemployment system, which the Senate will vote on a bill, which is House Bill 2127, to lower unemployment costs. We've got pretty darn good systems when you talk about comp systems and unemployment systems in terms of viability, solvency, predictability, and good rates. And I would protect those things. I feel very strongly about that. And then, you know, I could get into the issues of, land use, things like that that I won't get in. But, again, as part of that, I would support your SBDC program. to the fullest degree, because again, I don't know of any other program that offers a return on investment like the SBDC program does. That is, you actually create taxpayers, and these taxpayers create jobs that create more taxpayers, and it's just a ripple effect that I can't see any downside to. And so I would ask your support there. Is that five?
Thank you.
Close enough?
Thank you. Senator Berger.
Yes. JL, my question is, since regulation seems to be a kind of a mantra that goes through many of these sessions, and people speak of it in a negative tone, would you agree that since it is in the legislature that most regulations are made, that there is a high need to have more business people within the process of making regulations?
Well, I thank you, and Chair Smith and Senator Berger. I feel very strongly about private sector participation in the rulemaking process, and you bet I wish they were engaged more. There is such a thing as a small business impact that currently accompanies every rulemaking, notice of rulemaking. And, you know, quite honestly, I understand that that's a burden for agencies to do, but I feel that there has to be more emphasis placed on actually determining a small business impact when it accompanies a regulation or it's put out for notice. And I think that agencies should probably do a better job and pay more attention to actually getting private sector folks involved in the regulatory process. Now, in terms of the legislature, it's hard for me to argue that there's not adequate business representation, both in the makeup of the 90-member legislature and the members of the lobby who are in your offices every day. So it's at the regulatory agency level where I think the thrust needs to be in terms of actually bringing a private sector viewpoint to bear in the rulemaking process.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Welcome, Mrs. Smith.
Hello. Thank you very much. Hi. My name is Anita Smith. I'm the owner of Hanabee's Pound Cake and More. It's on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland, Oregon. And I'm very proud of it. So, do I just start talking?
How did you start your business?
Oh, I started my business exactly 3 years ago, April 9th, is when we opened. I started with Jackie Backley through the SBDC office, as well as through Portland State. They helped me with my business plans to accomplish opening up Hanabee's. Jackie has been a tremendous help, and that whole organization, I feel, needs to be able to generate more people to be able to reach people such as myself that are Oregonians, born and raised, round-the-way girls who have a dream and just need a little help and guidance to help make that come to be. I can't express that enough, except that there is a greater need or more. Maybe more minorities would be nice too in there, so that we can have some inner more interaction. But it's a wonderful service, so I do support it, you know, wholeheartedly.
Tell us about the type of assistance you received.
Leslie was saying before, the business plan spectrum, helping me deal with issues with Portland Development Commission and things such as that nature, just through the whole process between them and Portland State. They helped me deal with different issues at different times, permits, things like that. Yeah, things like that. Yeah, to open up my business.
Are you glad you're in business?
I am glad I'm in business. I get frustrated. I do get frustrated a lot because I have a wonderful product and a wonderful business, but the paperwork and the bureaucracy part of it can be very overwhelming and sometimes frustrating. like paying $5,000 to put up a lighted board to tell everybody you've got the best breakfast, but then still happen to pay $80 for a board to say we're open on the sidewalk. That frustrates me. You know, things like that, I just cannot deal with that. You know, those kind of things. Those things do frustrate me. Like, and all your fees and things due at the same time, $400 here, you'll lose your lid locked out, and, you know, all your yearly fees due at the same time. All these little things like that are very hard for small businesses to deal with. I do appreciate the fact that he brought up the fact that we are everything in our businesses, and sometimes we do not get a paycheck and all that. That felt so good to hear you. Because it really is true. You know, sometimes you feel like you're working for the state of Oregon and not for yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, so that can get frustrating. But the joyful part of it is the fact that a business such as mine is viable to my community. I just won the Community Pride Award yesterday, so I'm very happy about that. Growth is also important, and I find that to be a challenge, being a minority in Oregon, to say that, you know, you're capable of going on. We have a lot of hesitance for that area, which is, I find that to be sometimes very frustrating, you know, but I am a fighter, so.
I want to ask a question on that, and then I'm going to go to Senator Westling.
Excuse me, my hay fever is just going on.
What we're trying to do as a committee is trying to figure out what's the best way to stimulate Oregon's economy. And we're talking about today's small business. And one component of small businesses is a state agency that's called Women, Minorities, and Emerging Small Business. And just by looking at the look on your face, I have a feeling you haven't heard about that.
Haven't heard a thing. Haven't heard a thing about that.
Okay.
And again, that's what I'm speaking of. You know, I'm one of the major minority women businesses in Portland, and I've never heard of that or agency. You know, and that's another problem that I think that is going on with a lot of the minority businesses and the small businesses, period, in North and Northeast Portland, is that we don't hear and we don't know. And I think that that's very important. And businesses such as the SBDC is, you know, is one of those places we can get that information and that help. And that's why I feel that there needs to be even more, you know, additional funding for that. Because like he was speaking before, I have people now that work for me, that's been working for me now for over a year and a half, 2 years since I've started, who normally out in the sector wouldn't have never really gotten a chance such as that to become tax payable, tax-paying citizens of Portland, you know, renting their own places, buying their vehicles for the first time. And I'm not talking about teenagers. I'm talking about adults, you know, that small businesses such as mine can give them that opportunity that other places just won't. It's just a fact. So they need to be recognized and to be helped, you know, to grow so that they can, you know, give people an opportunity.
Correct.
That comes from my name.
I really appreciate that. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Comment, a question, and a piece of advice.
Okay.
The comment is just thank you for being in business and much continued success.
Thank you very much.
I mean, very sincerely. It's the backbone of our economy. It's the backbone of America. So thank you very sincerely.
Yeah.
The question, just off the top of your head, do you happen to know how many regulatory boards, commissions that you have to deal with
as a
private restaurateur that, I mean,
To let's say, like,
all the licenses and the health inspections and the OSHA.
Well, it was, you know, it was very frustrating for me because I took a building that was a beauty salon, okay, and I turned it into my restaurant. Okay. Not knowing at the time and working with state businesses, it had to have a change of occupancy permit, which therefore took us into thousands of dollars that we did not anticipate, which also cost me a lot of grief and a lot of a lot of headaches. So we had to go through the state, of course, because of the permits and things, and then you had to go through the Portland Development Commission because you have to go, well, you guys didn't know about all this either, you know, so you had to fight with that, and then you have to go through just one tremendous thing after another to where I think that we need people to on the board, so whoever make these rules and things such as that, to be able to recognize that these situations could occur and to be more flexible and to help small businesses deal with that in a much smoother way. I mean, at least 5 or 6 different agencies and situations I felt myself into, that even some of the people that I'm supposed to have this, you know, didn't know about, you know. But in the end, it's the person who's opening up the business that loses the money, you know. So that they
persevere. Don't let them get you.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Now, here's my advice.
Yes.
This might be the best advice anyone ever gave.
Okay.
If you're concerned about business opportunities, women and minorities,
uh-huh,
what you do when you're done testifying here,
uh-huh,
you get up from that chair.
Okay.
You walk all the way to the end of this hall.
Okay.
You get on the elevator.
Okay.
You push 3.
Okay.
You get off. You do a U-turn. Keep walking east that way, you go bang on the door of 311 and you go talk to Senator Carter.
Okay.
She's there.
Oh, is she?
She knows more about this stuff than any 10 people I know.
Okay.
And she can help.
I appreciate that.
If you're watching on TV, Margaret, she's coming right now.
We're going to do talk to Margaret. We're going to escort her there.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're coming with a police escort, Margaret,
all
to
right,
clean up your office. Thank you for being here.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
We do appreciate your comments. Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
We hope you'll do you have to leave right now? Or
no, not right now.
We'd love for you to stay and just listen to the rest of the folks who are going to testify.
No, Chair. Could I ask her about the name of her business?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, would you please tell me why you named your business that?
My mother's name is Hannah.
Okay.
And Beatrice was my mother-in-law.
Okay.
She's since passed on. But they're the two women in my life.
And so, Pound Cake?
Hannah B's Pound Cake and More. And that's where the name came. The pound cake comes from just that was my job as growing up. My mother, as a single parent, gave us each job. And mine was the cook. I got thrown a cookbook at a very early age.
And you got to make the pound cake.
And so I had to cook breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Good story. All right. Thank you very much for telling me that.
You're more than welcome.
I have to tell you, I'm a little disappointed because as we were putting the schedule together, we heard about this fabulous pound cake. And we were hoping you would have brought us a sample.
I had to move my 90-year-old mother, so that's why I'm kind of dressed like that. But next, you'll have to come to Hannah's.
That's right. Take for it.
There you go.
Now, I want to warn you, though. Don't take advice from this guy, because he's the same person who called Gary Neal and encouraged Gary to allow me to run for the legislature.
Oh!
for his advice.
Oh, okay.
So, thank you for coming.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, JL. We're now going to ask two other individuals to come up. Mr. O'Connor, president of Oregon Coast Community College. And then also, is Rob Thomas here with us? Terrific. Perhaps the two of you could come on up. And
we
welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pat O'Connor. I'm president of Oregon Coast Community College. I've been so since 1990. I'm an advocate of the small business development centers throughout Oregon and see them as an integral part of the community college system, Oregon. In this time of scarce resources, I guess one would ask why I'd make such a statement, and I have to agree with Senator Westland that the small business is the backbone of our community. There's an alignment of missions between the community college and the small business development centers. Both are committed to the economic vitality and well-being of our communities. And in the 15 years I've been community college president, I've seen many, many success stories of small businesses coming to access the services of Coast Community College Small Business. And I'm sure that's true throughout the state because that's something I hear time and time again. There is a relevancy to the curriculum that small businesses centers have to small business, given that 98% of businesses in Oregon have less than 100 employees and 96% have less than 20 employees. And I can just look around Lincoln County and I can tell that most of the businesses that we have in Lincoln County are indeed have very few employees. And the Small Business Development Center is a very important resource that small businesses look to increasing profitability and increasing sustainability in the area. To the community college in particular, it's been a bellwether of a lot of times of needed programs that are needed in our community. And a lot of times what happens is many of the programs that small business development centers experiment with or reach out to the small business later become programs for the larger community college for longer-term training. There's the timeliness of delivery, and I think this is something that we've talked about a lot, many times as far as advising, resources, and training that is necessary. Many times small businesses don't have the resources to have customized training and things like that, especially in smaller communities. And that's something that small business development centers really work hard on doing. They've been very responsive. They've been very cost effective, and I think that's something we've talked about as far as getting the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak. Lincoln County, I'll speak specifically now about our region, is 1.3% of the population. Yet we do 5% of the training and 3% of the advising that's done throughout the state. Senator Johnson brought up the hard point about bringing up the truth. Yes, not every small business is going to be successful, and I think that's one of the things that small businesses rely upon the Small Business Development Center to look at things such as, do you have a business plan? Do you have enough capital to make your venture go? Because long after the enthusiasm wears out on running a small business, many times what happens is it gets down to having a good, coherent plan. Also, in fact, this maximum impact, one statistic that I found fascinating is that for every state dollar invested in the Small Business Development Center program returns $8 in new state tax revenues over a 10-year period. I think that's a wonderful statistic that lets you know about the quality of investment you have, especially in times of limited resources. We work very closely at Oregon Coast Community College with our Small Business Development Center and, see them as an integral part. They were a critical part of its success of Oregon Coast Community College passing a local facility bond measure in a time of tight economic, because, again, they have the highest credibility throughout our community about what really works, for those that don't necessarily access the rest of community college services of college transfer, professional technical literacy. That's where the rubber hits the road. I think it's very important. In closing, I'd like to say that they play an integral role not only in recruitment but retention of business in helping for the economic development of Lincoln County. The booklet they have about small business, big impact, I could say couldn't be truer as far as what we find in our experience at Oregon Coast Community College. And speaking to my other community college president colleagues, they find this experience to be true in their experience as well. The question that I believe that was asked earlier about the five things that can be done to help, I think it is just adequately fund small business development centers to help those small businesses make good choices and make good business decisions as they grow and things like that. Enough of my overview. I would like to introduce Rob Thompson to speak a little bit more about the specifics of someone who's been served by a small business development center. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Smith. And the rest of the committee, I want to thank you in advance for the opportunity to talk to you today and listen to me. If I don't follow protocol for this sort of a hearing, I apologize.
You don't worry about it. We don't follow.
My first opportunity to do this, and it's a real honor for me. My name is Rob Thompson. I'm from Thompson Sanitary Service in Newport. We're a family-owned business and have been for over 42 years, and I'm a third-generation family member to that business. Somewhat of a scarcity. We are on the endangered species list. I'm here to support our Small Business Development Center mainly because our Small Business Development Center supports us. I'd like to thank Ron Spizo and Guy Faust from the Community College. Ron really has been the one that's helped us the most, and I want to thank him for asking me to come over today. Our business is healthy and secure because of the Oregon Coast Community Colleges and the Small Business Development Center. And over our association with this, the Small Business Development Center, over the years, we've learned the importance of doing things by the numbers. And I'd like to give you a little family history, if I can, about our business and why that is such an important factor. My grandfather moved to Newport in 43, which was the year my father was born, and began commercial fishing for 20 years. After that time, there was an opportunity to get into the solid waste business. The city wanted to franchise that activity, and Grandpa took advantage of that. 20 years later, my father took over the operations. And my grandfather was very much involved with running the truck, working on the trucks, operating the landfill, the day-to-day operations out on the street. My grandmother did the billing by hand, and it was very manual procedure. My father came in 83, and the first thing he did was add a computer to do the billing. Now, there's some family discussion as to whether or not that was to drive Grandma out of the office. Needless to say, he was successful on both accounts. Our business saw a tremendous amount of change over that next 20-year period until a few years ago when my brother and myself got involved. And my father did a fabulous job of managing our business, and it was primarily from a cash flow standpoint. If there was money in the bank account, it must be time, or we should consider looking at buying a new truck. If there wasn't, we should get out in the shop and fix the ones that we have. And that's really not true today. Running a business strictly from the cash flow standpoint, especially in our industry, just doesn't cut it. When Ron Spiezo came into our office for the first time, he said, I want to share a concept with you about a 1% improvement solution. And this was something that specifically helped our business. If you think about that 1% improvement, was the interaction, the time, and the money involved being involved with the SBDC valuable? Well, you better believe it was, because not only did we gain the 1% that Ron talked about, but we gained a lot of other things as well in other areas that I'll share with you. We now manage our business on a financial statement basis month to month. Not that we operate month to month, but we monitor on a monthly basis. We're in a simple business, relatively. We provide garbage and recycling service and send out bills. We're in a very complicated business, though, because we're highly regulated by multiple different agencies, both on the state and local level. And we recently are involved with what is called a rate reporting format in Newport. And without the help from Ron Spiezo and the ability to manage our business on a financial statement basis, being able to move through that rate reporting format process on an annual basis would be much, much more difficult than it is now. Our revenues and expenses are allocated on different factors by labor, customer counts, vessel weights. It's a fairly complex system. But it works quite well, and it's a good system not only for our business because it allows us an operating ratio, but it also is fair and just for the customers to make sure that they're getting a good value. The next topic, the importance of an individual learning and responsibility in our family, has always been there. But it really becomes apparent when you're involved with an SBDC how valuable the continuing education really and truly is. I think a lot of the reason that we see third, fourth generation businesses not make it today is they don't continue to improve and move forward at the brisk pace that business does. And I think that being involved with an educational network, it's an invaluable conduit to get access to those business experts. Ron also helped us understand that our business has a culture, and while it's difficult to change it, which is a good thing, it exists. And to understand what our culture is and what the intangible benefits of our family business culture really truly does for us was, again, it's an intangible benefit that if you monitor it and manage it over time, it can really be a valuable asset to you. What I mean by that more specifically is we had very good fights as a family. We made up, and we do it frequently. It's a weekly activity that Ron really paved the way to help show us how important it is for us to communicate with each other. And just the fact that we were engaged in an educational activity on a monthly basis with another monthly meeting, it provides that platform for family members to get together and hash it out and figure out where the direction the business is going. I'm a graduate of Oregon State University, and I'm proud of that. I've been involved with the Austin Family Business Program at varying degrees. But there's no question that the local support from Ron and the Small Business Development Center has really helped our family move from the second to third generation transition. It's not simple. There is no guidebook that you can buy. There's no dummies for third generation family business owners. It takes a custom plan. And having an individual like Ron in our office, as an irritation, so to speak, it was healthy and it was good for us. That's just one of the tools that the SBDC provided for us, was that facilitating some of that transition in the family. And finally, I'd like to share with you a little more about one of the programs that Ron really helped us get off the ground for our business. And that was in the early 90s, we were picking up recycling curbside in a source-separated fashion. We required that the customer keep those materials separate. When we would go out to service those accounts, our driver would get out of the truck, pick up that box of material, and keep those materials separate. It was a very labor-intensive process and was how recycling started in the state of Oregon in 93. Recycling has changed. The processes for that material in the state have changed. Ron was instrumental in helping us identify what the changes were, make us feel comfortable about making a very major change to how we provided those services to our customers. And just to give you a little information about how big of an impact and how big of a change that was, in November we changed from a source-separated system on a manual collection basis to a fully automated, commingled collection system. That happened in November. And prior to that change, we had about 700 customers a week placing material at the curb and about 10 tons of material being recovered or being recycled. The change required that we provide all of our customers a 65-gallon roll cart, and that we buy a new truck. We did that. We placed a little over 3,000 blue carts at the curb, and after a long, hard week of doing that distribution, started running the new truck the second week in November. We're currently experiencing around 2,000 customers per week participating in our recycling program. And I can tell you they're participating because it's easier. It makes sense. It makes them feel good. They don't have to separate the material anymore. They can throw it all together in one roll cart. We're also picking up around 25 tons of material on a weekly basis. And I don't mean to sensationalize my business. I think that recycling is fascinating. I think it's really neat. But I want you to think about what a huge impact that small change had. We have 2,000 people now participating in that program. We didn't add any customers. It's the same 3,500 customers we had in October, and we had over twice the turnout in that program. The other thing that I think is neat to think about in that new program is we went from 10 to 25 tons. Well, where did the other 15 tons go? It wasn't like the blue bin created more recycling. The material was there. The tonnage was on the curb. We were handling that tonnage, and I can tell you where it was going. It was going to Coffin Butte Valley landfills. It was going into the ground. And so, you know, that's my little piece of save the world today. But it is. It's those small things that Ron was able to come in and say, look, take a look at this. Remember the 1%. Evaluate this. And he was really that conduit to those business experts and utilizing the technology that's out there. And there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that the association with that educational network is going to keep our business strong, that it's not going to have a problem moving from the third generation. We've been in business for 42 years and have 22 family wage jobs. Most of those folks have been with us over 10 years. There are several folks that have been with us over 25 years. We are a family business, not just the family, but every member of that business is part of the family. And thanks again for letting me come over. If I would have known that you were interested in a sample of our product, I would have brought a truckload of garbage over. But I'd be happy to answer any questions. And I do really want to give a heartfelt thanks to Ron Spiezo, Guy Faust from the Community College and the SBDC program.
Well, we truly, truly appreciate you coming here. I have to share with you and with the committee, one of the first commercial loans I ever made was to a sanitation company. And the person who was helping me, guiding me in my credit decision, was a firm believer in getting out and working with the business. And so I got to spend 3 days out picking up sanitation product. And let me tell you, every problem is your problem. Customers aren't all that inclined to hear excuses that their garbage wasn't picked up, you know, and they want it timely, they want it efficiently, they want it accurately done. And it's a very complex business, and it has to be done correctly and every day. So, anyway, I truly appreciate you coming. Senator Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Rob. That was an excellent presentation, and also Pat O'Connor for being here. Mr. Chair, I want to tell you, you've seen by the excellence of those presentations, Lincoln County is a new county for me in my district, and they are really can-do people. This is not shining them on. They know that, too. And it has been a marvelous experience for me to get to know Lincoln County, and I greatly appreciate these constituents being here. So.
Well, I have to share with you folks, not in a million years were we going to have a small business day and not bring folks from Senator Berger's district, because every day she's advocating for small business and advocating for her district. And you folks are very, very well served by Senator Berger and her leadership here in the Capitol.
Well, we have a small family business as well, Rob. And we also have those family fights and make up and go right ahead.
It's healthy.
It is.
Thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you. Let's see here. Next on the agenda, we're going to ask Pat Murphy to come on up. Now, Andrea, did you also want to come up and just, would you mind coming up with us just very quickly? Come on up, but we'll have Andrea. We'll just kind of squeeze together.
Mr. Chair, my role is very limited in this, and I can step back. Paul Cosgrove, for the record, representing the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership. And my role is limited to introducing Mr. Murphy, who's the Executive Director of OMEP, and then just highlighting for you that there's a packet that was passed out and what's in that packet. The first couple of pages are a presentation that Mr. Murphy will be summarizing for you, and then following that, we've been lucky, without a PR agency, I might add, to have had our clients highlighted in a couple of recent news articles in the Eugene Register Guard and the Oregonian, and having one of our clients mentioned in those articles have a visit from the governor, and the governor's letter to the person who actually worked with that company is in that packet. We won't be talking about that. I just wanted to point that out to you. Mr. Murphy is the executive director of OMEP.
Welcome. Why don't we have you two gentlemen go and then we've got, what do we have here, about 23 minutes, and so perhaps you folks could take about 10, 12 of that. Andrea, I'd love to have you talk for about two or three, and then I'm going to ask Mr. Carter to come up and just wrap up the day.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Pat Murphy, for the record. On my right is Sam Collins, who's Vice President of Marquis Spa in Independence. He is one of our clients. In the interests of time, I'm going to use the acronym for our organization, OMEP, for Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, and skip some of the background so that we can move to Sam. But briefly, we're part of the national MEP program that was initiated in 1990 by the Department of Commerce with a mission of helping small manufacturers become more competitive. The definition of small the federal folks use is 500 or fewer employees. We do this primarily by teaching and helping companies implement lean manufacturing. The lean topic or word has gotten so much publicity lately. Everybody seems to know what lean is, but in fact, it's still a pretty complicated process. And it takes, there's three primary elements. It's leadership, tools, and workforce. It means a commitment by leadership to change. It means understanding and being able to implement the tools, and then actual total engagement of the entire workforce. Our specialty are the tools. And if you look at that second page of the handout I gave you, it breaks down some of the manufacturers in Oregon by size. And if you look at it, you'll see that manufacturing in Oregon is truly small business. There are approximately 6,000 companies. 99% of those companies, manufacturers, have fewer than 500 people. And further down, you'll see that 55%, 3,700, have 20 or fewer employees. The clients we work with are primarily in the $20 to $500 employee range. About 2,000 of them. And I checked numbers, and I know that there's a definition of small as 250 or fewer employees in the state. Of those 2,145, only 130 have between 250 and 500 employees. So the majority of companies we deal with, of course, are then 20 to 250. The next map I showed you just shows the distribution of manufacturers around the state and then where the OMEP offices are. We have three offices, Portland, Bend, and Medford. We are committed to serving the whole state, so we have people traveling all the time, daily back and forth to Eugene as an example, almost monthly to Baker City. That last map shows you an outline of projects around the state, just so you can get an idea. And then the final page is a results page. And these are results that are a combination of projections that we make when we start a project, and also a national survey that takes place 1 year after these projects are completed. But more importantly, I want Sam to talk about. He's an example of the kind of company that makes these results happen for us. Sam, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Smith and committee members. Our story is I guess, one of what we'd call good success. In 2002, our business was in a situation, and the situation being we were losing sales, inventories had grown, we were busting at the seams in our current facility. It was tough times for us. Didn't know what the future was really going to hold, and at that point didn't really know what to do about it. And so I got the charge to figure it out. And we're a company that's located in Independence, and we have a little over 200 employees, all of them owners. We're an ESOP. So it's a little bit of a different climate. We have a lot of concerned employees, not just because they come to work, but because they own a piece of the business. And so we had to make a change. And at that point in time, like I had mentioned, I was charged to help figure it out. And so doing some investigation and with some help of SEDCOR in Salem, it kind of led us the direction of OMEP. And so we had them come in, take a look at our business, went to some other businesses that they had done some work with, and at that point determined that they were a good fit for us and that the lean system actually fit our particular product, system, and people. And it wasn't just a change in how we produced our product, but it was a change in the culture. And in our particular environment, our business has been in existence since 1980. 19 of those years, I've been employed with the company. And you talk about culture, it started as a family business and has grown up to the point that it is and has today. So changing the culture was one of our key ingredients. We've done things in the past or had done things in the past where we had come in and made incremental improvements, but they kind of, get lost in the wake of work over time. We needed something that was going to stick. And the beauty of the MEP was, as they told us, and really as I laid it out to them, was I need you guys to teach us how to fish. Don't come in and fish for us and then leave and then we don't know how to do it. And they really did an excellent job of doing that. Today we are a different company. Sales have increased. Inventories are lower. Market share has been, increased. Our employees have found stability. We're a seasonal business, or had been a seasonal business, where typically we would see things start to increase about March and kind of die off in September, October, and we'd have a layoff period. And we don't see that happen anymore. That's some of our stronger months. We've taken market share away from our competitors. Fortunately, with some of the changes that we have seen happen, we've seen floor space open up, and just in November we launched a new business within our current facility, which has led to new jobs. So really has worked out well and wouldn't have been able to have done it without the help of our local MEP. And they have continued to stay around with us and continue to help us. And it hasn't just been manufacturing. We have looked at other aspects of our business, and we're getting better at doing what we do every day. And our employees are happier. Our training is better. Our quality is increased. And we really have made a significant turnabout at our company. And I don't know what else to say besides, we ran into them at the right time. And and I'm sorry, I can't bring a gift either. Our boxes are too big to get through the door. So
that's all right. We're partial to pound cake. That's right. Thank you for coming. Are there questions, comments? We appreciate you being here, and there was a reason why the chair invited you up, and I'm not sure what it was, but would you inform us?
Howdy. Thank you for the opportunity, committee members. I am one of Representative Smith's colleagues. I am the manager of the Small Business Development Center in the far east of Oregon, Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario.
Could you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Andrea Testi. And I had the opportunity of meeting with Representative Smith this morning when I showed up at the Capitol, and we were talking about small business and the impact it has on the state of Oregon and the impression from the economic development perspective that bringing in the larger companies from out of state is going to be the answer to economic development in the state of Oregon and is going to increase our workforce and our wage earning potential. And I just made the comment that, by golly, you can't have a large business unless you start with a small business first. So in eastern Oregon, our numbers are much smaller than the western part of the state, and we build businesses one person at a time. We work with sole proprietors, the mom-and-pop businesses on Main Street, and we help them determine the feasibility of their business, and we help them start their business and take them through the stages to being sustainable, successful, profitable business. And then we are expecting, our job is to go back years later and work with them on developing another employee to their workforce and gradually growing that business one by one. And that's how we see successes in eastern Oregon. And Greg just wanted me to speak a little bit about the perspective from more of an agricultural farming community and the type of outreach that we do with our clients and helping them look at diversifying the large farms and scaling them back to products that they can do on a local farmers market basis, how we work with our customers on designing labels and packaging and looking at types of containers and working on projects with providing food to our school districts and growing our local economy from the grassroots movement and one by one addressing that issue of how we're building the base of Oregon businesses and increasing the wage that people are putting back into the economy and back into the tax structure. And part of the way we do it is partnering with organizations like OMEP, Micro Enterprise Manufacturing Extension Partnership. Those were some of my comments. I'm glad Senator Johnson has come back into the room. You had asked a question of our State Director, Bill Carter, earlier, and I interpreted it as how are our business advisors credentialed, and how do we come up with a base level of expertise in order to then interact with our clients and provide them with advisory service? And that is what we presented as advisory service, not necessarily expertise, because I am not a degreed accountant or I am not a degreed lawyer. I am actually a librarian by degree. However, come with significant business owner experience. So we come with academic credentials to the job as well as significant business owner experience. And those are requirements that we are asked to bring to the job and are reviewed upon. So when we meet with clients, we understand both the management level aspects of it as well as the day-to-day routine of being the washer of the windows, the sanitation person, as well as your own marketer, advertiser, salesperson, etc. And we hope to dovetail the expertise that we individually come with it and then share that back with our clients. We listen to our clients quite extensively and then help guide them. Your point is well taken. We see clients that come in and we know, by golly, they are not going to have a chance at succeeding in small business because of a myriad of issues, whether it's lack of financing, lack of education, or lack of tenacity to show up on the job and actually be there rather than going hunting or fishing that day. And while it's not our job to tell them it's not going to be successful, my strategy and a strategy that many business advisors use is to provide them with enough homework where they need to research their industry, research their market, do their financial projections, and come to the realization themselves that this is not going to be a successful business. I do periodically tell someone, by golly, you need to go out and find a job where someone's going to pay your wage because you're never going to be successful at that. I consider that a success if I keep somebody from making a bad financial decision and becoming the drain on the economy in the long term rather than being productive.
Sandra Johnson.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Let me start by apologizing. Some of us find that we've just got more stuff to stuff into a day than we've got time to do it, and it results in these side trips outside. I apologize. That was very helpful. I started a small business in the late 70s and have walked a mile in the shoes of many of the people in this room where you know that you've written the paychecks for everybody else and yours is the one that isn't going to make it. And I particularly appreciated the comment that you made about, you know, you've done a good day's piece of work if you've saved somebody from taking all of their money out of their retirement account and making a very bad decision. So I appreciate that. I think as the chair and I have had discussions about economic development in the state, one of the things that has come through loud and clear is the need for technical competence as partners with the state out in the local level. And so hearing your recitation of the kind of approach that you take to your work and in having conversations with some of your colleagues, it has just driven the point home to me over and over again, stealing a line from the chairman, that we've got to get away from the mentality of giving away fish, and we've got to create fishermen. And looking,
excuse me, Senator Johnson, I need to add to that, though.
Actually, okay. I think you stole it from somebody else.
But I need to add to that. That, you know, I just want to correct this, and then I have to add, because I'm from Eastern Oregon. You know, it's if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day.
Mm-hmm.
If you teach a man to fish, he'll eat for a lifetime. However, if you teach this man to sell the fish, he will be able to eat beef from Eastern Oregon.
As a native Central Oregonian, I knew that. I just wasn't going to belabor the point. Anyway, I think looking for the technically competent partners in the field and then collectively coming to the conclusion, what defines a technically competent partner? Do they have to have a certain degree of credentialing? Do they have to have a mindset about business? Do they have to have certain experience in business? Made a payroll? But there's a huge difference between signing the front and the back of a check. And that's the kind of discussion that we've been having, and having the benefit of your thoughts is very informative, and I appreciate you waiting until I came back in to share those.
Oh, great. Thank you. And we partner quite often. It's a team effort in our office, and I expect in the other Biz Center offices as well, in terms of who has an expertise better when working with clients. I tend to leverage my abilities to talk with the bankers and encourage them to look at those loans that we know are going to be productive. My partner tends to do better on the marketing and advertising aspects, so we share clients. And then if I have someone, for example, looking at manufacturing, I will call somebody that I know has an expertise in that area and bring them into the team. And that leads me to a comment. Senator Morse is not here, but he was asking things that your committee could do to support these efforts. And one thing I would encourage you to look at statewide are all of the programs that support small businesses. And there are a myriad of programs in addition to the Small Business Development Center and the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership and the Women and Minority and Emerging Small Business Program and Business Finance Programs. And I can go through the list that I'm sure you've already reviewed. And I would challenge you to critique those programs based on the return on investment back to the state in terms of employees, in terms of a living wage, and evaluate whether the structure is appropriate for the delivery of those services and how they can better be encouraged, might be a positive word, to collaborate and interface more positively, because the end goal for all of us is the same. It's the survivability of Oregon and providing a positive environment for our families to work and live in, and for small businesses to be able to continue the theme that is already laid out for us, that they are the business that Oregon is supporting, and we need to move forward in that direction.
Senator Johnson.
One more question. From your perspective, doing this work sort of in the trenches, do you think that it is appropriate for the state to be making high-risk loans to entrepreneurs to encourage the kind of economic development that you're talking about?
That's a loaded question, and I'll just speak from the heart because I have worked with the state finance departments on high-risk loans, and yes, with a big qualifier, that those loans have been made through clients that have funneled through the Small Business Development Center, have worked with us extensively on analyzing their business plan, putting the numbers through the test twice and thrice and measuring it and determining to the best of our collective abilities that that profitability is going to be there. And basically writing a letter of reference that those people have worked with us and are agreeing to continue to work with us through the process to maintain their vigilance of their business. So if there are criteria established with that, I believe you need to take some risk in order to bring that investment back, because not every potential small business owner or existing small business owner is going to have that background to work from or is going to have that exact collateral mix that you need to leverage the loan. So yes, but with qualifiers.
I'd like to ask you a question. Yeah. One of the comments we heard today was regulation mm-hmm. tends to be a barrier for small business owners. What role do the small business development centers play in helping business owners get through the myriad of regulation that we heard?
What I interpret that we provide, and the small business owners who have sat here before you very eloquently and represented the services that they have seen, is the education process and the liaison process and the interpretation. I don't expect my business owners to come in and know that they need to register their business with the Secretary of State office, and that as well they might want to also trademark their name and not just do an assumed business name. They don't know the difference between those two pieces of intellectual property. Then they also are expected to get in touch with the revenue department and register for a business identification number, and then get in touch with the labor department and fill out the other forms that they need to legitimize their business across the board. They don't know the federal IRS department, Internal Revenue Service, where they apply for a employee identification number, is another piece of that on the federal level. They don't often know that they have county regulations, and that in Malheur County it doesn't apply. There is not a business license, but if they go to Baker City and want to open a business, that they do need a business license up there. So what I would expect my client to come in is ask me what it is they need to be a legitimate business and share with me the industry that they are going in. I am a librarian, as I said, by nature, so give me a research question, and I'm happy to go to the nth limit to provide them with the research that they need. We do have a great resource in the website that Pat Allen has been working on in terms of streamlining the regulatory process, and I share that with our clients quite regularly. It's wonderful, the question they come back with, and we had talked with Secretary of State Bradbury earlier today, was why can't this be seamless? Why can't we go to one portal and provide the information once and have all of the agencies link to it? And I think that would be a wonderful task to endeavor to do. I know it has a lot of complications associated with it, but if we could flowchart this easier for businesses so that they're able to move forward, the better off they will be in the beginning.
Thank you very much. We truly appreciate your time, all three of you. Is there any questions of the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Bill, you've got 45 seconds. I don't know if I'd want to follow Andrea. She's pretty good.
Chair Smith, that was exactly my thought, is that she's a tough act to follow, and I'm absolutely pleased to remind the chair and the committee that in addition to Andrea, there's 18 other SBDC directors around the state that are just as talented, just as knowledgeable about the resources and the needs of the small businesses in their community. In addition, they have there's a number of small business management instructors, like we were referring to Ron earlier, that really get down face-to-face over the long term and follow the careers of these small business owners. So it's a great organization to be part of. And I probably should say that we know that we've been singing to the choir here, that most of you are small business owners, that you understand these issues, and that you're intently interested in listening for very specific types of suggestions about how to help the small business community. And we have a toolbox. It's got two views. One is the collaborative toolbox that all organizations contribute to, and then the SBDCs, of course, have their own toolbox, and we're trying very hard to keep our tools up to date. As the economy changes and as the needs of our small business communities change, we recognize that there are many economies around Oregon, that they are different in the east and the west and the south and in Portland, but there's very similar types of issues and problems as well. So I just want to leave one thought here. I think this message on this pen is that small business creates jobs has been well said. But in addition to that, if you take care of small business and your work here in this building, small business will take care of the state of Oregon. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We truly appreciate everyone coming to the Capitol today to support small business in the state of Oregon. I think it was very profound. I think it was very timely. And we truly hope that you'll continue to watch the work of this committee, in particular as we start rolling out budgets, and hold our feet to the fire and make sure that we do the good work we need to support small business in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we are going to adjourn for the day.